Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Outspoken with White and Jordan. 100% engagement.
It's a total disrespect.
Download, stand well back, listen.
Jim White and Simon Jordan.
I don't see that view.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
Thanks for listening to Outspoken with White and Jordan. I'm Jim White, and today myself and Simon Jordan discussed Wales, who are two games away from the Euros, beginning with a playoff semi-final at home to Finland tonight. Simon couldn't care less. Meantime, Nike's quote, playful update of the flag of St. George has not gone down well among some. Is it another example of companies playing into today's agenda-driven society, or is the backlash merely patriotism gone overboard? We speak to former FA Managing Director Adrian Bevington. Plus, we talk boxing with Spencer Oliver and are joined by British middleweight champion Nathan Heaney. You're listening to Outspoken with White and Jordan. Wales, Simon, two games away from the Euros, beginning with a playoff semi-final at home to Finland tonight. Yeah, I know. You're quite indifferent towards it. Now, if they come through it, they'll play a one-legged playoff final at the Cardiff Stadium against Poland or Estonia on Tuesday, which would see qualification to the Euros, as Scotland has done, as England have done. We want to see the Welsh there. I for sure want to see my Welsh friends there. I have many Welsh friends. I want to see them, like John Hartson would love to work out there. John Williams, a great friend of mine, Swansea supporter. They'd all love to go there. And as the manager, Rob Page, says, we'll give it everything.
It's quite a relaxed environment, and that's not because we're blasé about it. We're taking things for granted. I think we're in good form at this moment in time. Most of the squad are out playing football at club level, so that helps us in many respects. Training's been excellent. The environment's been good, just as good as it has been in the past. We've gone through similar experiences to the pressures of the playoff situation in against Austria and you know, more importantly then Ukraine, and the difficulty surrounding that. So we're all quite relaxed, but like I said, we're not underestimating the challenge that we've got. It's going to be a really, really tough game. There's everything to play for, but we're fully prepared for it.
Let's hope they are, and let's hope they get there. Having said that, Simon, gone are the days of Mark Hughes, Ian Rush, more lately, Gareth Bale. You look at this current Welsh generation, has success at Euro 2016 unfairly skewed expectation, do you think?
Well, that's the thing about football, isn't it? It will always, if you do something well for a period of time, the expectation levels will rise. Just look at the Chelsea fans and their reaction to what's going on with their football club right now because of expectations of the past. You look at these things, but without expectations, you don't have emotion. Without emotion, you don't have a game. So it has to come in. It has to be priced into the thinking. The reality of it is that Wales, for years, have had good players. They've had great players that have, you know, we're going back to John Charles in the 60s, on to the 70s and 80s with Mark Hughes and Ryan Giggs. But they had a great, great, great player in Gareth Bale that carried them. It's undeniable that the reasons why the Welsh achieved anything of any substance in 2016 and onwards was because they had such a player in Gareth Bale that at key moments, in key games, at key times, he was the difference between Wales being their usual average, achieving very little, and ultimately the difference between them achieving something rather significant like they did in 2016.
Yeah, which is a sad fact, but true. I mean, after what you and I saw in Qatar, we were out there and we saw the Welsh in action. You didn't help yourself by ending with you wiping the Welsh shirt on your shoes during one of the shows, and that didn't go down well with some of the supporters. And I had to step in and save you from one.
Couldn't see anything better to wipe it with.
But how valuable is qualification for Rob Page and the rest of the lads if they then go to the top table in international football, certainly in European football, and I'm afraid to say, as he did in Qatar, somewhat stink the place out?
Oh, no, no. It must be part and parcel of the opportunity to build and to evolve and to keep on putting yourself in the way of an opportunity to get better, to get more experience. Absolutely. Irrespective of the mickey taking and poking fun at the Welsh, they need to qualify for big tournaments, because then you build an underlying innate belief that the qualifying groups are worth something to you. And if you get to the World Cup, yes, you want to be better.
Yeah.
Yes, you want to achieve more. And
yeah.
I was remarkably disappointed, not in the technical ability of the Welsh in the England game, but the lack of fire and determination. I thought it was going to be some battle that the English were going to have to overcome, and the Welsh didn't turn up. They didn't breathe fire like we were told they were going to do. And that is one thing. But yeah, listen, of course you don't want there to be going into tournaments and be the whipping boys. But they're not the whipping boys. They're just not good enough because they don't have the depth of players to draw from. But going to tournaments and achieving things by qualifying is still quite meaningful.
Yeah, very much so. Let's say Wales get there. And as I say, I hope they do. Who would we expect more from
Scotland
at the finals? Scotland or Wales?
Scotland.
Why? Because...
I think they're a better side. I think they've got a better manager. And I think that they have been systematically, over the last two or three years, building up an identity and a value in their football, albeit they have the same challenges as the Welsh, which is a smaller pool of players to draw from, and a quite poor at times Scottish pyramid in terms of what it's producing in both economic and quality terms. But I think the Scottish, I feel that they're in better nick. They are in better fettle. They've got momentum, forward momentum.
Mm.
And I think that there's you know, I don't think either one of those teams are going to set the world on fire, comparatively speaking. But I would expect more from Scotland.
Yeah, yeah. I think I tend to agree with that,
well,
obviously.
You would.
I think we should clip that up, producer Luke. That was
Simon. It doesn't mean
That was almost a compliment.
But that's like setting yourself a low standard and managing to achieve it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's only because it's the lesser of two evils.
Yeah, 0-0 at Wembley, wasn't it?
And you tried to get a national holiday out of it.
Yeah.
A draw.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, fantastic.
Steady yourself.
Nick some turf and get a 0-0 draw. There's the two achievements in recent times.
That turf is doing very nicely in my back garden, incidentally. So Wales go in tonight, and let's hope they can achieve. Let's hope that they can see off Finland. Sorry to our Finnish listeners this morning, but that is a matter of fact. Let's hope it's either Poland or Estonia who are not up to the challenge come the next match on Tuesday, and the Wales beat them, either one of those two, on that particular occasion, because we want Wales to get there. Of that, there is no doubt. I mean, having failed to qualify for a major tournament between 1958 and 2016, Wales are aiming to reach qualification for their fourth out of five and a third successive Euros. Simon, that actually shouldn't be ignored. A third successive Euros. Be marvellous if they get there, and I, for one, hope that they do. Welsh fans, Simon said, and he's right to say it, because I was there with him and we watched you in Qatar, and you didn't breathe fire. You didn't live up to all the expectation. What makes you think now, without Gareth Bale, that you actually can, if you were to get to the Euro finals in Germany? 03717 223344 81089. The Welsh are a proud nation, Simon, as are the Scots, as are the Irish. And it would just be phenomenal if England, Scotland and Wales were all to be there. Were all to be there and were mob-handed out there in Germany in the summer. Be terrific.
For whom?
I have
zero interest.
All of us.
I have zero interest in whether the Scots or the Welsh are there. I'm an Englishman. I'm interested in England. I wasn't interested in it being the messy World Cup for some sentimental tripe. I'm interested in England, not because I'm a little Englander, but because I'm
That's
English.
That's exactly what you are.
It's nothing to do with it. It's called being proud of your nation.
All right.
And being proud of what you are, and stop self-flagellating by letting idiots put different crosses on the back of your shirts. But we'll get onto that later, no doubt.
We are going to get onto that. The former managing director of the FA, Adrian Bevington, is going to join us for that little discussion, which I think is going to get quite heated, because we're going to take calls on that as well. But come on, you Welsh out there. Tell me how you're going to do it. Tell me how confident you are tonight.
The world most dangerous download. Outspoken with White and Jordan from the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
You'll be listening in Wales, and if you are, you'll be hearing Mr. Jordan sounding off. Doesn't really care how the Welsh get on tonight against Finland, and if you get that far, how you do against Estonia or
Poland.
Doesn't really interest me whatsoever. I'm English. It's as simple as that. Paul's an Oxford United fan who's as equally blinkered as you, Simon. Hi, fellows. I'm not Welsh, but totally agree with Simon on being English. We're the only home nation hated by all the others. So I agree. I couldn't care less whether the Welsh get there or not. Paul,
indeed.
Oxford United fan. Good for you, Paul. Good for you. I've been broadening your mind.
If you polled it, what did you say when we had the European Championship? It'll be the worst day of my life if England win the European Championships.
That's what you said. No, I didn't. I said
yes,
I'd be made to feel... I didn't. And producer please. Looks on my side through my headphones. I said I'd be made to feel uncomfortable in certain quarters by certain people.
No, you didn't. No, you didn't. You said it'd be the worst day of your life if England win the European Championships.
Mohammed, I'm coming to you down in Cardiff. But interestingly, there's one from Stuart. Just a word for Simon. England, with 10 times the population of Scotland and God knows how much more than Wales,
so what?
Have won exactly the same in the last 57 years.
That's not the point. I'm not saying England are better. I'm saying I'm not interested in Wales and Scotland qualifying for any tournament. I didn't say we were better, bigger, bolder, more engaging, more interesting, and won more. I made none of those claims. So I said not interested.
So you're totally invested in England and only England?
Correct.
Okay, so you're looking forward to going to Wembley on Saturday night to see the Brazil game?
When it comes to international football.
Where's your seat? No, I'm not
a corporate ligger.
You're what?
I'm not a corporate ligger.
A corporate ligger. So you've paid for your seat at Wembley.
I'm not going. I've got other things to do.
Sorry, I just thought you were... It's England and nothing
but
friendly.
I don't go to friendly games.
But it's Brazil.
They're exhibition games.
But that doesn't interest you.
I've seen it before.
Oh, I see. Mohammed in Cardiff, good morning to you. Wales, big opportunity tonight to see off Finland. How do you feel this morning about your chances?
I think Wales got a great chance because both of the games at the Cardiff City Stadium tonight and the atmosphere is going to be the 12th man for Wales. And I believe... Wales got a fantastic chance, and if they do get Poland, I think that's going to be the more trickier game because Poland are more seasonal, they're more experienced than Wales. But I think Wales got a great chance tonight, especially being at home at the Cardiff City Stadium.
So do I, Mohammed. So do I. The thing was, as I mentioned earlier, Simon and I were in Qatar. I don't know if you were there, if you watched it on telly, but of course, Wales really didn't turn up at the World Cup finals. Do you worry if they can get to the Euros, they might achieve next to nothing?
I think at the time, Wales underperformed because I think a lot of the players had fitness issues. Like the main guy, Gareth Bale, didn't play a lot of games that season. He was lacking in match sharpness. Ramsey had his injury problems, and they were the two key components of the team.
True.
So that was the main problem, and the whole game was based. But now I see it's more of a collective team, and I think Wales got a great chance. But the reason I was speaking is because of Simon. He's just typical English arrogance, why nobody likes England and everybody always in the home nations wants England to lose.
But what's arrogant about me saying...
Sorry, Mohammed's in full flow. Carry on, Mohammed.
Sorry, Mohammed, you finish.
England haven't won nothing since 66 and he only won something in that final by a dodgy Russian referee and the ball didn't really cross the line. But you play that stupid song at every single championships and then everybody in the home nations has enough of you and that. Nobody likes England because you just think you're above the other home nations.
Well, that seems a very unkind thing to say.
Fantastic delivery, and what you're assuming
is that a disinterest in the fortunes of another nation, on international level, is some form of arrogance. I'm an Englishman. My focus is on the England team. I don't wish the Welsh badly. I'm just not interested in whether you win, lose or draw.
Did you or did you not wipe the Welsh shirt on your shoe?
Because I was sick and tired of listening to how Robson Kanu's drivel, and it was the only way to shut him up for 5 seconds. One of the worst things about the Welsh doing well is we have to listen to Dean Saunders' comment forever and a day.
Well, I like the sounds of you, Mohammed. So, me as a Scotsman, will you watch England-Brazil on Saturday night with interest? You'll probably watch it with interest, I'm sure.
Of course I will, because it's two great... England have great players and Brazil have great players, and they're two big nations, so obviously everyone's going to watch it. But the problem is, I think because of the London-centric media... And everything is always about England. Like, a lot of these young English players, they're really nice young gentlemen. But at the international level, like against France and the World Cup, once the going got tough, they balled it. Like Harry Kane, one of the greatest strikers, he had the penalty and he balled it.
That's a fair observation, Mohammed.
They didn't know how to come back from that.
It's a fair observation.
That could be a learning experience for them. But Wales don't have the big pool that England got. But no matter what England young player comes up, you put so much pressure on him by labelling every English player world-class by the London-centric media, and that's what happens.
What is London-centric media? What does that mean?
It's like, you.
No, but it's not London. I lived for 18 months in Swansea. I have an immense affection for Welsh.
You get driven out
I didn't. I got driven across the bridge and had to pay a toll on the way in, which I resented because the Welsh didn't have to pay on the way out. But it's got nothing to do with bloody arrogance, Mohammed.
But what I'm saying is, even if you're watching another game in the Euros on BBC and ITV, straight away they're talking about England. Even if you're watching a Wales-Scotland game, straight away we're coming back, let's go to the England camp.
Yeah.
There's nothing regarding other teams, but it's always England, England,
Mohammed,
England.
You must get over this inferiority complex.
Mohammed, I liked your call. Thank you so much. Good luck tonight to you and the Welsh. Lee's a Manchester United fan. Is he Welsh? Lee, you're Welsh, as I'm led to believe. Good morning. What do you think of this? And Wales' chances tonight? Give us your honest view.
Morning, gents. Yes, I am a United fan, but I am a Welsh fan, obviously, as well. There's a good chance we'll win tonight, but I think Poland will be a bit tougher. And on another level, I think Simon's spot on. I don't care if England do well. I don't care if Scotland do well. I'm just here for the Welsh. But
well said.
Going forward, I don't think Robert Page is our man. When we went to Qatar, it was embarrassing. We were, as you said, we were the whipping boys. And I just think there's a... Maybe much again the same if we do make it to Germany this summer. I think we haven't got the strength in depth as it's been highlighted, and I just don't think Robert Page is in game management. It's just not there, and I just don't think he's the man taking us forward.
That's interesting, Lee. I mean, it's still the same players. So would a different manager get a tune out of them?
I think so. I speak to a lot of my friends, a lot of the Welsh fans, and I think we're all under the same umbrella. We would like the man who's available at the moment, Steve Cooper, to come in, but that could just be a bit of a pipe dream. But you never know. Stranger things have happened in Welsh football. But I don't know. I just don't think Robert Page is... it's great that we're here again, and we've got the potential of another a Euros, a third one in a row. But again, I don't want us to go there and be the whipping boys. Qatar was embarrassing. We were shocking.
It was a bit, Lee, but I would have thought you want to go. No matter what, you need to get there.
Yeah, of course, yeah. We want to be there. We want to be representing. But
yeah.
I don't want a repeat of the World Cup, because it was just we were literally there making up the numbers. And I don't know where going forward. I just can't see Robert Page being the man to do it for us. I'm going tonight, and I'll be singing my heart out, and I'll be representing, and I'll be proud. But again, it's just I don't know. And again, it is what it is at the moment. We haven't got the players, and we haven't got a goalkeeper. None of our goalkeepers are playing. They're not playing regular football, and it's a small nation.
Okay,
isn't it?
Lee, go win it tonight, mate. Go win it tonight. That's what we want. Lee, a Manchester United and Wales supporter. There's Chris up in Glasgow. Two really nice, quite differing sentences of a different tone. I'm Scottish, and I agree with Simon. Couldn't care less if Wales qualify. All right, Chris, fair enough if that is your view. But I love watching England. And then he says, I love watching them getting disappointed in the later stages of a major tournament.
And that's fine. And there's nothing wrong with them having that view. And it was everything, you know, the Welsh team singing in 2016 because of the demise of the English. All of that. And what you do is you hide behind the fact that it's English arrogance, because someone's honest enough to say, I really don't care if Wales do. I don't wish them badly. We've had this discussion many a time before. I don't have any issues with the Welsh doing good or badly. I just don't have a particular interest, and I don't think I should have to have.
No.
And someone saying because the Welsh and the Irish fought in the Second World War, then ultimately I should have some sort of allegiance to the international football team is just bloody silly.
You don't feel any empathy with your Welsh cousins, your Irish friends, or dare I say, your Scottish chums sitting yards from you.
I have respect for the values of those countries, albeit I think that the Welsh and their ridiculous First Minister now have got their own challenges, but that's a different discussion. But I don't, on an international football stage, which is about competitivity, I don't have any interest, and I don't think it's wrong to. I have no more interest in Wales than I do in Estonia.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact,
you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Danger. Flammable exchanges ahead. Outspoken with White and Jordan. From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
What kind of message, Simon, are Nike sending out regards the national flag? Let's look at this, because for those who don't know, the England strip this weekend, little flag in the back of the collar, that the neck, is different this time around. On Twitter, Nike announced the launch of the new England kit with fresh pictures, and they did it with a number of tweets with the pictures involved. So number one, they say the new England shirt celebrate football heroes of the past with a modern twist. Now, if you're watching this morning on YouTube and Facebook, you'll see what Nike have done with the back of the collar, which normally would be the red cross on a white background, the St. George's flag. Nike call this, what you're looking at now, it's a bit multicoloured, a playful update to the flag of St. George, appearing on the back of the collar to unite and inspire. And then they say, the graphic side panels on the away kit pay homage to forward-thinking fashionistas. So they've gone all out to change this thing. Mm. Simon, you've seen it. We're joined here this morning by the former FA Managing Director, Adrian Bevington. Adrian, good morning to you.
Morning, Jim. Morning, Simon.
Morning, Adrian.
Adrian, thanks so much for joining us. Before you say your bit, Adrian, about maybe FA policy on something like this from the past, what's your take on this, Simon? What do you think of what Nike have done to your St. George's flag?
I don't understand why we need a playful interpretation of our national flag. I don't want to get into the hysteria and hyperbole that some other people are talking about, but I don't quite understand what we're trying to achieve here. It's part of our national identity. You know, you have the flag of St. Andrews, you have the flag of St. David's, and you have the flag of St. Patrick's in various other parts of the home nations. I don't quite understand why Nike, and I would suggest under the FA's brief, feel that we need to have a playful interpretation of our national identity. Are we somewhat embarrassed by it? Is it not part of our heritage? Do we not believe in its value set? Yes, there are a few people that have adapted it in a way that isn't particularly palatable. But I look at this and say, I don't quite understand why we would want to do this and why we feel the necessity to do it and what it actually represents. Well, Adrian, and what the values of it are.
Would the FA, if you can wear your FA hat for a moment, would they have given the nod to Nike to do this?
Yeah, they have to, because look, I put my FA hat away a long time ago, but it's sort of still in the background forever. And we would always have the kit supplier come and present what they were planning to do. And there'd be different conversations that would take place generally with the commercial people. It would then get put in front of the team manager often, historically. And then what I did when I got involved at the more senior level, I just brought the whole sort of management structure around it, you know, from the chief exec, the chairperson, commercial team, and the football people, and said, right, Nike, Umbro, as it was previously, come in, present, and then we'll have an open discussion about it before we sign it off. And I don't know the exact process now, but I can't believe this has been approved without sign off of at least the commercial director and the chief executive of the organisation.
What would you have done if you were still there, Adrian? As you emphasise you're no longer there, of course, and it's been some time. But would you have encouraged the FA to sign this off?
Personally, no. I think it's an emotive subject, and it was always going to cause the conjecture that we've got. I always try to see it from all sides, and I understand from Nike's perspective, they're looking to push all the time and be
cutting edge and as modern as they can be to the different markets they serve. But like what Simon's just said there, it's our flag. You know, when the games take place, particularly during the tournament, you'll see the stadium absolutely swamped with the cross of St. George hanging everywhere. It's a national identity, and I just don't really think it needs to be changed. And it's going to upset a lot of people because people do feel passionate about this.
I mean, Adrian's saying a lot of people will be upset, but it's not just patriotism gone overboard.
No. I mean, you have to have... The problem with this country at times is the policy of appeasement and no central values. And that's why we have so many of the challenges we have in societal issues. And the reality is we have a national identity. And part of that is the flag of St. George's. It's not me getting carried away and being offended on behalf of it. But the bottom line is, is it a joke? Is our national identity a joke? Is it something that we're ashamed of? Is it something that people like Nike that allow biological males to wear sports bras to promote it to young kids in this day and age where, you know, sexuality and gender are becoming an ideological battle, are preposterously allowed to do these sort of things. And I don't understand the thinking behind it. You know, it's great that you've got people like Emily Thornberry running around ridiculing the St. George's flag and telling it's the ideal of little white van men, which I think was an appalling thing for her to have done. But this has to be pride and value in the principles of this country. And if you're going to imitate the St. George's cross by turning it into something that's not, what is that underlying message? What's the point of it?
Well,
what does it represent? To many unite and to show respect? What an utter load of rubbish.
Adrian, many listeners getting in touch. Here's one, Danny. It's absolutely disgusting they've changed our national flag in the shirt. All other Nike shirts have left the flags and colours alone, so why have they done it with England? There's Ryan, though, Adrian, saying, Simon says in one breath he is not a little Englander. Then he gets offended like a snowflake because of the flag in another. He says, I'm English, I couldn't care less about this. I mean, what way do you think fans will think, Adrian? Because if anybody knows England fans, you do.
I think we've all got an opinion as an individual. Anyone who's English is entitled to a view on it, and there's going to be a mixed opinion. What Simon said is correct, though. It's an emotional subject. It's part of our national identity. And it's the same as with the other home nations, with, you know, the St. Andrew's cross. Are we going to see that changed from blue and white? You know, are we going to see the flag of Ireland change to different colours down the line? I don't really understand what they're trying to achieve by this, but it was always going to be something. If I'd been in the meetings at the very beginning of this myself, back in the time I was there, I would have immediately flagged up and said, are you sure about this? Because this is going to create a whole load of conjecture. Every time there's a kit launch, there's nearly always an issue of some point with a kit launch because it's just the way it is. It creates a stir. This is a massive ticket for Nike in their football calendar. The England kit is one of their biggest sellers in the world. They pay a lot of money to be associated with the national team and actually had a great few years because of the measured success of the national team under Gareth Southgate. So, you know, it may end up selling more kits for them. Who knows? Commercially, it might drive it with the conjecture it's created. But certainly from my point of view, I just would have cancelled against it. And if I'd been in a position to sign off or not, I wouldn't have signed that off personally.
Download, stand well back, listen. Outspoken with White and Jordan. From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
Yes, it's that time, 5 minutes past 12 noon. It is now officially Thursday lunchtime and Spencer Oliver has joined us to talk boxing and walks into his own theme tune. Mr. Oliver, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Jim. Good afternoon, Simon. How are you both doing?
Very well.
We're doing very well indeed. Before we go anywhere, Spencer, of course, for the next hour, in the company of Mr. Jordan, is going to be talking boxing. Thereafter, we head down to the Den, to the home of Millwall Football Club, where Simon is not safe, it's fair to be said. He can't be seen around those parts. That's why he's not going. But Spencer is, because Spencer's going to line up in the team to attempt to win the TalkSport trophy. The team All-Stars against Team Breakfast. McCoist and Shabana Hearn have Team Breakfast. Team All-Stars, managed by Alan Pardew and Ollie Murs, includes one Spencer Oliver.
Yes, looking forward to that. I'm glad you told me who I'm playing for, because I didn't know who I was playing for, actually. I'm sure I was on a winning team last time.
But you're useless, aren't you?
I'm terrible.
Yeah.
But that's it. They laugh at me as opposed to with me. And that's the human side of it we bring to it.
Well, sadly, last time around, Spence, you were an unused substitute with the...
when they didn't have enough players on the pitch.
With the emphasis on unused. I think Faye Carruthers was fielded before you. But anyway, I'm looking at the All-Stars team. Darren Bent is a captain.
Rupert Bell was put on before him.
Rupert Bell played the blinder, Simon.
I'm sure I did make an appearance. I was on for a minute or two. I'm sure I was.
Yep. Alex Crook has lost 7 stone and will feature in the All-Stars team.
Sure, you'll find it again.
In Team Breakfast, we have people like Dean Saunders, Hugh Woozencroft, Sam Matterface, Jermaine Pennant, who could have played in his own and won it last time around. But you're in amongst quite elite company this afternoon, Spencer.
Absolutely. Listen, Jermaine Pennant, I was blown away, actually, the way that he plays.
He was marvellous.
He was a professional footballer.
Yeah, I know, but Simon, I still think he could compete at that level. I'm sure he could. He says he couldn't. He says Division One, but I'm like, nah.
Yeah.
That was superb.
It's just struck me with all your football ability that you tell us that you have got and your white boots. Why are you nowhere near this?
Why would I want to be? Where's the benefit of association?
No, let me bring you right up to date. You weren't asked.
I was asked. I was most certainly asked.
Right. Okay.
Like I was asked to go to the awards dinner on Monday night, but I'm busy.
But you're not
going.
All right. Okay. Fair enough. The white boots will stay in the box and Spencer will take to the field. It's as simple as that. Spencer, a lot to get through in the next hour because boxing fans are urging me to get a bend on, and I will. Joe Joyce is back, but without a bang. I mean, last weekend, Joyce eventually overcame Cash Alley in his first bout since being knocked out by Zhili Zhang. Did he struggle, Spencer? Is it fair to say?
Well, I think we need to see a lot more from Joe Joyce. That sort of performance will not put him back up in the mix. I mean, Cash Alley's an awkward guy. He was boxing on the outside, wasn't really engaging, looping that right hand over. But the worry for me was, and the concern for me was, that Joe Joyce was still getting hit regularly with those shots. You know, defensively, he's not tightened up much. It's all about adaptability and whether you can improve on the things that the mistakes that you've made in the past. And there was no evidence of that. And I think a performance like that from Joe Joyce will only take him to a certain level. So still much more work to do. But great to see him back in the winning formula, and hopefully we see him back in the mix soon.
I mean, Simon, it's amazing how a fighter's stock can rise and then fall in a short space of time, and that's what's happening with Joe.
Well, it is, because obviously he made a decision, and a lot of people admired the decision for him to fight Zhili Zhang the first time round, thought it was a lot of risk attached to it, and he took that fight, bought into the idea that he can take a punch from anyone, anywhere, and made it part of his stock in trade that he could take it on the chin, and duly did. And then lost both fights. I mean, what we saw from Joe, for me, was no improvement whatsoever and getting hit at will by a far lesser opponent, which worries me from the future because I really like Joe. I like him. I saw him in the foyer with Adam Morley's manager a week ago before the fight, and I want him to do well. But I think we're at a point now where an old dog and new tricks is not going to manifest itself. And I think we've seen Joe Joyce operate at a level when he does get to a level that can punch and is at a world level, he gets himself in trouble. And I don't want that for him. But I think I personally said to Spencer the other day, there's no improvements. What have they been doing for the last 4 or 5 months in the gym?
I agree with you, Simon. I think that, you know, going back into that Zhili Zhang fight, you go, look, he needs to improve in things. He needs to adapt to get the victory in the second fight. We didn't see that at all. We didn't see any improvements from the Cash Alley one. I mean, listen, a great fight right now. Dillian White, who's just come back out of what he's been through as well. You know, he's got his license back. He's boxing again. He boxed at the weekend as well. He overcame Christian Hammer in 3 rounds. Christian Hammer didn't come to fight. It was a frustrating night for Dillian White, but that's where you see Joe Joyce sat now. You go, Joe Joyce versus Dillian White, that's a great fight. And the winner then goes on and puts himself back into the mix, and the loser, you know, has to seriously look at where they go from there.
Spencer, wasn't that long ago. In fact, just days ago, Don Charles, the top trainer, was in here and he was talking about his fighter, Daniel Dubois, who was saying he's ready to go. He's going to have a fight soon. We now believe that's going to be against Filip Hergovic on the 1st of June in Saudi Arabia. But regardless of that, Don was saying, you bet, Dubois is ready to go now.
We're in training. I'm not at liberty to disclose who and when. It'll be soon. That's all you need to know. There is a fight on the horizon, but honestly, put my hand on my heart, I don't know who. We don't know who it is. We're ready. When we're given a date, then you fine-tune it for that date. Mm. But we're good. He's in the gym every day.
I mean, what's his mindset? You know,
very, very good.
Post-Usyk, post-everything.
Very, very, very good. He's maturing every day. People haven't seen nothing yet. From that Miller fight, we use that momentum, both physically, mentally. He's grown. He's really matured. He's, every day we're seeing this guy like a flower blossoming in the gym.
Well, that sounds all right, Spencer. Dubois against Hergovic, according to Hergovic's co-trainer Ronnie Shields. So how would that play out?
Listen, I think that's a great fight for both those guys. You know, with the landscape of the heavyweights at the moment, with what's going on with the Undisputed, the possible return with the Undisputed, Anthony Joshua's looking for an opponent as well. The way I see this, actually, and how it would play out is, I see Filip Hergovic versus Daniel Dubois, with the winner fighting Anthony Joshua, possibly for one of the belts that's become vacated after the Undisputed fight. That's the sort of landscape, and that's the way that I understand it. I see Daniel Dubois all the time in the gym with Don Charles. It's a gym that I go to regularly, and Don Charles has done a great job with him. He really has, like, not just on the physicalities, but on the mental side. And that's been Daniel's big problem in the past. So Don Charles is doing a fantastic job with Daniel Dubois. And, he's right up there in the mix.
And funnily enough, though, Simon, it was Joyce who now, we're agreed, is at a fork in the road, who beat Dubois in London, absolutely, a fight you and I were at together.
I think it's an interesting thought process because, I mean, Filip Hergovic has been the mandatory for the IBF for quite some time now. And sooner rather than later, post the Fury Usyk fight, it's likely that the IBF belt is going to have to be vacated. So I find it strange why Hergovic would want to put himself in the way of another fight that's got huge risk attached to it before fighting for... Because if he loses that fight to Daniel Dubois, he loses all he's worked for, which is to be the mandatory. And I always felt that it was more likely that what would happen is if the bouts can be scattered quick enough and the deals can be done quick enough, that Joshua would fight Hergovic for the vacant IBF and then go into a conversation with Fury or Usyk about a unification fight.
I think from my understanding, that's exactly the way they see it, but they've got the confidence to go in there with Daniel Dubois. And you're right in what you say. It's a huge risk going in with someone like Dubois, putting your mandatory position on the road. But I think, Simon, it's all about the money that they're going to be getting.
And we'll see about the economics makes sense. Because it's absolutely. But also, it's a step up for Daniel Dubois because he has stepped up against Usyk. And despite a very serious debate about whether Usyk was hit below the belt or not, there was a class gap. Right, and then the psychological thought process about how he recovered from it. He should beat Jarrell Miller. He should have beaten Jarrell Miller, and he did beat him. But other than that, results against Kevin Lorena and Trevor Bryant are not blueprints for Daniel Dubois to be a world-class fighter. And we've seen him in a couple of occasions where he stepped up, or what we felt was a sideways step with Joe Joyce, and lost. So I think there's real risk behind this. But Daniel Dubois, once upon a time, was being written by people people like Jeff Powell as forget Fury, forget Anthony Joshua. This is the next guy.
Goodbye. Yeah,
and we've still got to see a lot more from Daniel.
The world's most dangerous download. Outspoken with White and Jordan. From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
And three becomes four because I'm delighted to say it is a warm welcome to British middleweight champion Nathan Heaney to the show. Nathan, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, lads. Pleasure to be on.
Nathan, thanking you, mate. It's our pleasure having you on. You retained your British middleweight title, although it was a split draw decision. You're up against Brad Pauls. It was a thriller, but how do you reflect on it? Because this is one, obviously, you would have dearly loved to have won.
Yeah, it's at the time, like when the fight finished, thoughts were off. I've won that by two rounds. Now, listen, did he have two good rounds where he was excellent and he caught me good? He certainly did. But I think what's that, perception-wise, that might have just clouded what's happened in the other 10 rounds, particularly the first seven rounds of the fights. The first seven rounds, it was like 6-1. He'd won one of the first seven rounds. And then obviously he had a great eighth round where he hurt me, but he didn't drop me. And then I won round 9 when Steve Woodvine told me to get back on the plan. And then round 10 was probably even. And then round 11, he caught me again. But again, I didn't go down. So he won that round. And then round 12... I thought I edged, but again, could have been an even round. So I was very disappointed not to get the win.
Yeah,
I don't want to retain my title on a draw.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, isn't it? Yeah.
Nathan, look, it was a great contest, and it's one of those. It is subjective scoring. Those rounds, a lot of those rounds were close. He did have two big rounds, you're right, in the 8th and the 11th round. But what that done was showed a lot of character from your side, showed that you can weather those storms, come through those sort of things, and it was a fantastic contest. I suppose the million-dollar question now is, do you do it again? Does he get another shot, or are you looking at other avenues?
Listen, what happens in the future, me and Brad Poole's, certainly that, listen, that fight is everyone will want to watch that fight again in the future. And I've already had a rematch with the previous opponents as well, with Jack Flatley. So listen, I'm not averse to any rematches whatsoever. But the fact of the matter is, I want to go to the pinnacle of my career. I want to fight at the highest level possible. And I also want to fight in my city as well, in Stoke-on-Trent, in Stoke City. So that's my short-term ultimate goal.
I know that for a fact, Nathan, that you've got your heart set fighting at the Bet365 Stadium. I mean, what would that mean to you?
It mean everything to me and everything to people in my city. Listen, Stoke-on-Trent, we have absolutely nothing. We have nothing. Like, all we have is the people, and I've said that a number of times, because the people are phenomenal. You don't have to see how they've backed me all the way through my career. The atmospheres they create, the passion that... And I've always said, I want to bring the biggest nights back to Stoke-on-Trent, but to bring the biggest nights, probably sporting-wise, that we've had, would be magical. So that is, like you say, that's the dream.
Yeah, Nathan, I've been there in Stoke-on-Trent, actually, when you've topped bills up there, and your fans are absolutely crazy. The support you've got is phenomenal. I believe you sold over 2,000 tickets yourself the other night against Brad Poole's, which is phenomenal. There's not many fighters around today that can do that sort of stuff. Now, you was talking about fighting there at the Bet365 Stadium. Would someone like Tyler Denny, who's the European champion, that's the guy that comes into my head, and I think that's the sort of fight that you could fill the stadium with, you for a British and European title. Is that a possibility, someone like that?
I know potentially it would be anyway, so, but obviously I wouldn't say Tony, but yeah, listen.
Come on, mate, we're all about exclusives here, you might as well drop it.
Yeah, come on, Nathan, you said you were delighted to be on, mate, so tell us.
Yeah, no, I can't. So I spoke to George Horn yesterday. And obviously, we're going to have another discussion today and possibly tomorrow.
Okay.
Listen, everything's going great. And listen, Tyler Denny is a phenomenal fighter. Me and Tyler have done many, many rounds together, sparring in the build-ups to fights and stuff. And with him being the European champion, he's very, very good.
I like it, Simon. Listening to Nathan here, this always gets me about the boxers who come on and join us. His desire to succeed, the appetite they have to be successful, it's undeniable. It's always there, isn't it?
But also their unique character. One of the things that I like so much about boxing, and the reasons why I've done so many of the discussions on the Upfront show I do with boxers, is because I find their thinking and their way that they look at the world so different to other sportsmen. Because if you're going to go into a business where the end result is hurt and pain somewhere along the line, whichever way, whether you're the winner or the loser, you have to have a unique mindset. Well, I mean, Nathan, your last performance against Denzel Bentley was the performance that really people latched upon and really looked at you and went, wow, right? Is that, for you, a benchmark of how you want to perform in every fight going forward? Not, I know it's start stating the bleeding obvious, but to get to where you want to get to, you're 34 years of age, this is your time now, right? You've got no real time to waste. You're in a very competitive division. I mean, European titles, world titles, what's in your mind?
Absolutely, you're correct. So the Denzel Bentley fight just shows what I can do in terms of my performances. And I know I've got me straight out. I want to fight for a world title. That's it. To be the first person from Stoke-on-Trent to ever fight for a world title would be the greatest honour. And like I say, win, lose or draw, and the hurt that's going to come with that, the idea is to win it and become the first ever world champion. And hopefully fighters from my city and so on can get a bit of inspiration for that, and they can go on to better things than me. But a world title is my absolute dream.
I think you showed that desire, that winning formula the other night actually against Brad Poole's, because there was times there, and you know, I'm speaking as a guy that was watching it and going, knowing what was going through your mind, your mindset at that time, round 8, but round 11 particularly, where you showed that sort of character, you go, where that sort of stuff, where the physicalities then leave you and it's all about the mental strength and you know, the psychological battle that comes in, you showed that you have that. You can't install that in someone. You're born with that. That's not something you can just, you know, install in someone.
Yeah, I pride myself on being quite tough. I'm quite a placid lad. I'm quite... you wouldn't consider me a fighter, really, outside boxing. But I'm a... Yes, like, any less of a man would have gone down, potentially. But I've got a lot of will about me and a lot of grit, and I know the ramifications of going down. And particularly in that fight, if I'd have gone down, I'd have now lost my British titles, which should never have happened in the first place. So it's, yeah, thank goodness I'm tough.
Do you mean, if it were to be Tyler Denny, do you think he represents
a better and bigger challenge than the fight you just had?
Oh, Taledani, it's a very, very tough fight. And also Taledani beat...
I know, that's why I'm asking it. Yeah.
He beat him convincingly as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, to be honest, Tal's never been in the discussion for the fight at the ground, to be honest. But listen, he should be. He's the European champion, so his name should be mentioned in these kind of scenarios. But yeah, like I say, for me, I'd love to fight for the world title.
Nathan, you say, Nathan, that what do the people of Stoke and Trent have? Not a lot. They've got you, mate, and they're clearly very, very proud of you. That's why Spencer says they turn out in big numbers to watch you. What's happening with your beloved Stoke City, though? 19th in the championship. If they're not careful, they'll be flirting soon with relegation. Need to be careful, right?
Yeah, well, we're in a proper relegation battle this moment in time. We had some good results recently against Middlesbrough and Preston, and unfortunately, not to get anything from Leeds. So in terms of confidence, I thought the momentum's with them. But when I boxed the other day, we had Norwich at home and we got turned over 3-0, which, to be honest, I didn't expect us to beat Norwich anyway, but you didn't really want to get turned over. But I'm just hoping the lads just keep gritting it out, and they've got to grit it out, because that's the moment we're in now. They've got to get points. They have to get points. But at the bottom of the championship, it's so tight. It's unreal. Like, you literally, I think you're one win away from being like 14th,
sure,
but then also loss away from being at the bottom.
Yeah. Nathan, just quickly before you go, mate, I just wanted to ask you, you're talking about world titles there and, you know, fighting up at that sort of level. Anyway, any possibility, any talks ever of the Eubank Junior fight? He's world ranked. He's number one and number two in the governing bodies. Is that a fight you've looked at?
I would, listen, that would be an amazing fight, because but I think the kind of money that guy would want, I don't think it's ever been in discussion, to be honest.
You can give it to him out of your ticket sales, mate. You must get enough commission off that.
Great point. No, I don't get into that anyway. So yeah, it's I think he'd want too much money.
Nathan Heaney, you can come on anytime, mate. We enjoyed you. Thank you so much. Good luck next time out. Nathan Heaney.
The world's most dangerous download. Outspoken with White and Jordan. From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
Thanks for listening to Outspoken with White and Jordan. Please leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast from. We're back tomorrow to bring you the best of the show.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.